What exactly is the controversy between Apple and the FBI after San Bernardino's terrorist attacks? Is it us taking one step closer to a brave new world, or is it an important development in national security? Figure it out as we talk about Apple versus FBI on this episode of The End of the Law. Hello, and welcome to The End of the Law, the show that looks at what happens when the fringes of humanity meet the ends of the law. Every other week, I look at situations in the modern world where the law has outpaced what it is we humans are used to dealing with and figure out how the law deals with modern messes. Today, we're going to be talking about Apple versus iPhone, what the controversy going on there is, what Apple's arguments are, what the government's arguments are, whether or not either of them should be or are right. I'm going to be doing it with my pal, John Ellison, who's here. A part of me wants to call you like a recovering lawyer. He did corporate.
I often use that term.
He did corporate litigation for a big firm here in New York and has since adjusted his professional status and is now doing landlord-tenant litigation and a bunch of other really cool stuff with a company called Bobby Red. But generally, an all-around very, very bright and very amazing dude. So welcome, John.
Thanks, Grant. It's good to be here. Yeah, mostly I just like to sit around and talk about the law.
Yeah, well, that's what you and I do a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's good.
That's, you know, I can't believe it took me this long to be like, John, like, let's just do it here. Anyway, before we get into Apple versus FBI, I do want to point out that Radio Free Brooklyn is now on Patreon, which is a website where you can go and support us for as little as $1 a month. And that's no slouchy offer. Everything here at Radio Free Brooklyn is volunteer maintained and operated. And so really anything helps at all in order for us to keep the lights on or keep our turntables moving. It is very, very helpful. So if you do want to become a patron, go to www.patreon.com/Radio Free Brooklyn. Also, please email me. A lot of the topics for the shows are just things that I think are interesting or conversations that I've had with people or things I see in the news. But if there's anything in particular you want to hear, send me an email at theendofthelaw@gmail.com. And a special shout out to my pal Charlotte, who sent me a bunch of ideas, which I hope to touch on in the remaining episodes of the season. So with that being said, let's turn to Apple versus the FBI. And before we get into the legal facts of it or the legal battle between the FBI and Apple, I want to talk about a little bit of the facts that have gotten us to the situation now. So what happened was obviously there was the terrorist attack in December in San Bernardino where a man and his wife went and killed 14 people at a community center. And the gentleman, the husband in that case, Farouk, I don't know his first, John, do you know his first name?
Syed
Farouk had an iPhone, and that iPhone the FBI suspects might have evidence about the killing. He might have been talking to other people. He might have been talking to people overseas, but the FBI cannot get into that phone. The FBI cannot see what those things are, and the reason is because typically iPhones back up to the iCloud. If you have an iPhone and this feature is enabled and you go to your home network, it just automatically backs up onto the iCloud. But for whatever reason, Farouk's iPhone stopped doing that 2 months before the shooting. And even if it hadn't have done that, the FBI asked the county, who he worked for, his employer, to change the iCloud password because actually the phone belonged. It was the county owned the phone and had given it to Farouk. So this is all by way of saying the FBI doesn't know what's on the iPhone and they can't get what's on the iPhone because of three security features that iPhones have. First, if you put 10 incorrect passcodes in, the iPhone just automatically deletes all the information, all the encrypted information on the phone. The second, if you type an incorrect password, you have to wait a certain period of time before you try again. So I think between the fifth and sixth incorrect tries, you have to wait 1 minute. Between the sixth and seventh, you have to wait 5 minutes. And between the seventh and eighth, it's some bigger number. And then the final feature is that you actually have to go in and individually type each passcode. So if your passcode is 0000 or whatever, that you'd have to try 0000 with your finger. And then you'd have to try 0001, 0002, and you'd actually have to do it with your hand. So the controversy in the case is this. The FBI is really afraid the information will get deleted if they go about trying to figure this out. So they've gone to a magistrate judge in San Diego or in the area that San Bernardino is in and said, "Judge, under this law called the All Writs Act, we can force Apple to write software to overcome these security features." And Apple has basically said, no, you can't. And that's exactly what it is we want to talk about. John, did I miss anything?
No, I think that's right. I mean, basically what the FBI is trying to do is disable those features so that it can hook up a program to the phone that'll just try millions of password combinations basically instantly until it finds the right one. So with all these features disabled, the FBI estimates it would take 26 minutes to figure out the password to the phone.
Right. And I also read somewhere that if they don't do it, it would take 26 years.
Right.
I'm not sure if that 26 symmetry is if they made it up or whatever, but it's a very, very long time versus a very, very short time. And so the FBI went to this magistrate judge and said, "Judge, under the All Writs Act, we can force Apple to write software to overcome these security features." And the magistrate judge says, "Yeah, you can." And Apple has said, "No, you can't." And they're appealing it. And they're appealing it saying that the All Writs Act doesn't apply. So let's dive in there. Does the All Writs Act apply? So in order for the All Writs Act to apply, Apple can't be too far from the controversy. It can't be an unreasonable burden on Apple in order to create the software. And Apple's participation, I guess, has to be necessary. It's the order under the All Writs Act must be something that's necessary. And John, I think that Apple makes arguments, all those arguments, right? They say each of those things is the case as it relates to them.
Right. And, so for removed, they say, look, we made this phone, put the software on it, we put it out into the market, we're totally removed from it now. You know, the traditional application of the All Writs Act is a telecommunications company that has phone lines in its building. And the FBI wants them to put a wiretap onto a line in the building that criminals are currently using to commit crime. And so under the test, they're right there. It's right. Their facilities. They're and closely they're, connected.
Yeah. The service they're providing is still being used. But right. Apple's saying, no, we sold the phone. We're done.
Right. It's out there. It's not ours anymore.
Yeah.
Government saying, well, you still provide patches and updates and you can collect information from them. So it's a legal standard that has to be decided. The bigger one, I think, is burden.
Yeah.
Because, traditionally All Writs Act in aid of warrants is doing something that's not costly. You know, just installing a wiretap device onto a phone line, turning over credit card records, turning over security footage from a camera.
Right.
You know, it's all pretty easy stuff that companies do as a matter of normal business. Here, what the FBI is asking Apple to do is actually write a new operating system that doesn't have these features. And Apple estimates it'll take 10 full-time employees a month to do this on this one case. And if it's granted, attorneys general across the country have said, well, we want that too. So you're looking at thousands of phones per year. And every time it's done, they need to write the software.
Right. And John, do you know if whether or not does the fact that this is Apple's proprietary information and they're kind of being asked to weaken their product vis-a-vis other products, does that go to the burden as well? I mean
– yeah. Apple has made – they've kind of expanded the scope of this burden concept. They said it's also a burden on us because it's against our fundamental interest to provide phones with security. And they also say – this is a burden upon the public because you're going to deprive our customers of security.
Right. I mean, millions of iPhones.
Right. Really. Across the world. They actually package a lot more into burden, into this kind of public burden category. Right. So they basically they say, look, if you make us create this bypass software, we're going to have to keep a copy of that code because we're going to have to do it thousands and thousands of times. And if that code will be very valuable to hackers, to foreign governments. So there's a risk that Apple's network could be hacked and the code could be stolen. It'll expose vulnerabilities in Apple's operating system. It'll allow hackers to bypass anyone's encryption. So you get identity theft, you get cyber warfare, cyber terrorism. You could also get bad actors blackmailing the engineers who designed the code to get a copy of it, or bribing them. You could also, you know, what Apple has said is, once we create this code and we have it, what's to stop foreign governments, China or Russia, from ordering us to turn it over?
And the government are kind of, they bring that up in their brief, right? They say, well, you're already doing all this other stuff for China anyway.
Right.
And from what I understand, and I read this in another brief that the government didn't send, but the Apple really already goes through a lot of trouble to submit their operating system to like the government-owned agency first to then, I don't know, be installed into phones or whatever. But Apple already placates the Chinese authorities in order to sell their phones there, which is one quarter of their market share.
Right, right. They cooperate pretty extensively with the Chinese government. They're required to in order to stay in business. You know, this is going another step, though. What the government's asking Apple to do is essentially create a backdoor around encryption, which the Chinese government has been pressuring Apple to do. Apple has refused. It says it doesn't do that for anyone. And the U.S. government has been telling China, you can't ask Apple to do that. And now the government's asking Apple to do exactly that. So, you know, there is nothing to stop the Chinese from forcing Apple to do that right now. But I think politically, they haven't gone that far because of relations with the U.S.
Well, I mean, and all the that burden conversation, though, I think brings up an interesting point that I didn't know before we started researching it. And that's that this controversy, in a way, is about this one particular phone. And I kind of hesitate in saying that because I think the opening sentence in Apple's brief is this controversy is not about one phone.
Right.
But what – basically, what Apple's argument is in saying that, in making that contention that it's not about one phone, is that there's a risk to a lot of other phones. But in this one in particular case, the FBI only wants to look at Farouk's phone and get the encrypted data from Farouk's phone. Now, Apple's saying, oh, well, one, if we allow it in this case, you're going to force us to do it in thousands of other cases. And two, other people are going to force us to do this, or other people are going to steal it, or other people are going to bribe us, or these vulnerabilities will become obvious. But the controversy in this particular case is about this one phone, but it might extend beyond that.
I think Apple's strategy here is to bring in big policy issues and tell the courts, look, you're really stepping into politics here. And actually, that's important in the context of the All Writs Act, because the All Writs Act, it's an 18th century law, which is very broad, very general, and allows courts to issue orders to enforce the law, even when Congress hasn't yet enacted a law allowing them to do that. And at the time it was introduced because Congress
was new. Which
is
like the 1700s.
Right, yeah. 1700s. There were not a lot of laws on the books. Congress didn't yet know what the courts would have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, it's a stopgap until Congress deals with an issue.
Right.
And Apple's argument is this issue is for Congress. This is actually kind of a separate argument that they've been arguing or been making, is that this has been part of the public debate, you know, whether government should force Apple and other companies to create backdoors into their encryption.
Right. And there was another case basically that addressed something similar to this, or that Apple was using to say this, which was a case here in Brooklyn, actually. I'm not sure where in Brooklyn, but it was in Brooklyn. And I think it was a drug enforcement case. And it was a phone that was not this of the same model that Farouk had. It was a model earlier. And it was a model that Apple can easily get the encrypted data from. And they didn't need to create anything for Apple to get the encrypted data. And in fact, Apple had given over encrypted data, I think, 60 times before. But in this one particular case in Brooklyn, Apple just said no. To the order, similar as they're doing in San Bernardino. That case was appealed to the district court, and the district court judge just came out, I think it was at the, on the 29th of February, came out with a decision that said, no, you know, All Writs Act doesn't apply. It's not the law that governs the situation. What is the law that governs the situation is a law called CALEA, which is the Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act, I think. And he makes the point, the district judge makes the point that CALEA doesn't apply because these are types of things that aren't addressed in CALEA. And so I can interpret from them not being addressed that Congress intended to not give this power or, you know, that Congress intended to not have Apple bypass its own security. I kind of hacked that, John. I know you did a little bit more research, but I think that's generally kind of what happened. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, CALEA, Communications Assistant for Law Enforcement Act,
right.
That was passed some time ago and applied to the interception of, you know, data in motion. So basically it required telecommunications companies to put in technology so that they could eavesdrop on electronic communications.
Right.
So the government could then use that.
Like emails, like an email going from someone to
right.
someone.
Emails, text messages, yeah. live message, you know, data messages, things like that. Basically like a wiretap.
Right.
But applying to electronic communications. And it said you have to have this technology in place so we can get this if we need it. And it specifically said this doesn't talk about decryption or encryption. It only applies to telecommunications providers. It's AT&T and T-Mobile. It's not Apple. And so Apple has argued, look, Congress thought about decryption, encryption when they passed CALEA. They thought about whether this should apply to Apple, and they decided not to apply it to us. So Congress has already stepped in.
Mm-hmm.
All Writs Act shouldn't apply here because this issue is already being dealt with.
Right.
And the legal issue there is, what can you infer from Congress's inaction as opposed to its affirmative action?
Right. I mean, that's like a classic legal tension, right?
Yeah.
Is judges argue really strongly over whether or not you can infer anything from inaction versus action. Because in inaction, it's very hard to prove that they intended to exclude something. Maybe they just didn't think of it, but if they had, they would have included it. Or it's very, very hard to prove the absence of something. But that's what this judge has done, is said, because this isn't there, because it looked like there was an evaluation of whether or not to make it apply to Apple, they intended to not Apple to not have to do exactly what is going on here, which is bypass their own security.
Right, right. I mean, and there's the argument about implications of CALEA, the original CALEA, but also in the last couple of years, the Department of Justice has been pushing for an extension of CALEA, and it's called CALEA 2, to explicitly cover companies like Apple and to specifically require them to give backdoors into their encryption.
So exactly what's happening.
Exactly what's happening. Now, if Congress had introduced this, had tabled this law and it had been voted down, I think it would be pretty clear that the All Writs Act doesn't apply. Because
mm-hmm.
this is an issue that Congress affirmatively discussed and rejected.
Right.
The problem is there was extensive lobbying, a lot of discussion, but no bill was ever put to vote.
And that was the executive's decision,
right.
wasn't it? Right.
The Obama and the White House basically backed down under pressure from technology groups, civil liberties advocates, and decided not to put this to a vote.
Yeah.
And maybe just the political climate wasn't right yet, who knows. But so Apple is arguing, look, Congress is talking about this. This is going to happen. There's currently legislation out there that's been proposed, again, not voted on, that would protect encryption. So they're telling the courts, don't apply the All Writs Act because Congress is going to act soon.
Yeah.
And the policy implications of this are so huge that you're really overstepping your bounds.
And courts are pretty sensitive to that. They don't like to overstep when Congress is doing something or when the executive is doing something. They
right.
very much like to fancy themselves as like third-party arbiters. And so, you know, activist judges is kind of a bad word for everyone,
yeah.
no matter where, if you lean left or lean right.
Right, right.
But that brings up an interesting point, and it's almost the one that I think is most scary maybe or most interesting about the whole case, and that's that the FBI specifically chose this case to be their standard bearer of what they need, what law enforcement needs. So obviously, all of us have heard of the attacks in San Bernardino. They were the most deadly terrorist attacks since 9/11. There's been all sorts of media coverage of it, and the FBI has said, here's our chance. Here's our chance to either expand the All Writs Act into exactly what we need it to be, or here's our chance to lose on CALEA and then go to Congress and say, we need CALEA too now for terrorism. And then what congressperson would ever vote against terrorism?
Right.
It's way too risky to ever be weak on terrorism, particularly in today's political climate.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Obama and the executive branch backed down from CALEA too.
Right.
Before San Bernardino. And then the FBI says, okay, well, if Congress, you won't do it, then we'll do it ourselves through the All Writs Act.
Right. Do those match, do you know? I wonder if that actually – I mean, they were probably using the All Writs Act the whole time.
No, this is very new.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they used – I mean, so since October, I think the FBI has filed 9 or 10 All Writs Act applications for decryption of phones.
And CALEA 2 was decided to not move forward around the same time?
I think it was prior to San Bernardino.
Oh, yeah. I think so too. But it would be interesting if it was September, they decided no CALEA 2. Then in October, all the Writs Act cases came – all these All Writs Act cases came out.
Yeah, I think it was an ongoing discussion.
Right.
But, at this point now, so – if FBI wins this case against Apple, then they won't need congressional action on the encryption issue. But if they lose, then they can go back to Congress and say, look, until you act, we can't get the information on this terrorist phone.
Right. There's or any terrorist.
Any terrorist. Yeah. There's potentially accomplices of this terrorist walking around with bombs.
Right.
We need to get this data.
Or he was talking to – this is something that you pointed out before we got on the air. Or he was talking to people overseas.
Yeah. Maybe there's recruiters out there who are currently talking to other people out there. We need this information. And, they're in a much better political position.
Yeah.
I mean, since the FBI versus Apple – dispute started, a lot of politicians have been coming out against, actively, vocally coming out against encryption or in favor of a backdoor. In fact, Obama, just Friday, he said he wasn't talking about the FBI versus Apple case, but he said, civil liberties are important, privacy is important, but you can't have a total black box. Yeah. There has to be some way to get into this encrypted data, generally. And I think he's now, before this, he was really on the side of technologists, civil liberties, and now he's clearly leaning more towards the anti-terrorist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for my money, he kind of has to, particularly in light of heightened fears of terrorist attacks and ISIS's seeming ability to infiltrate social media, infiltrate our communities, and do very, very deadly attacks, whether they be in Paris or San Bernardino, but I don't know how politically not to be like that, but that's kind of the danger. That's what kind of fascinates me so much about this case is that on the one hand, you have these very clear or very pointable, if you will, political wins. Like we got this phone and therefore we got this recruiter, or we got, we decrypted this phone and we got this other terrorist, or we decrypted this phone and we learned about something about ISIS's network. Versus a strong encryption system in the United States generally. And that's something that Mike Hayden, who was the former director of the CIA, and I think he was a former director of the NSA during Bush era, has said strong encryption is better for national security than most people think. I don't know that he specifically said that it's better than FBI getting access to this phone.
He did.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah, he said, basically Hayden is – perspective is you have to think in the long term. Don't think about this one phone. You have to think about if we create a backdoor, the backdoor will be out there. One, it'll be out there. But two, if the U.S. government orders Apple to create a backdoor, then you can be sure that foreign governments will order Apple to create the same backdoor for them.
And Apple I mean, they kind of have their hands in.
Yeah, and the U.S. government wouldn't be able to intervene to say, hey, listen, you can't push them around like this because they're doing the same thing.
Right.
And they can't refuse.
Yeah, they lose their moral authority to be the beacon of freedom that maybe the U.S. likes to be sometimes.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, once you get to that point, sure, we got the information on this phone in the short term and we get information on other phones in the short term. But in the long term, no data is safe.
Yeah.
And we're exposed to cyber warfare, cyber hacking, identity theft. And this is, you know, we're talking about hacking into the data of major U.S. corporations. You know, it's not individual.
Or corporations hacking corporations was something that I read. That if, I mean, there's nothing to stop them from getting this software that Apple is being compelled or potentially compelled to create.
Right.
But that's that. I mean, that's what's scary is that there's the slow burn of maybe the reality of the dangers of decryption and then the very bright fire of terrorist victories or, you know, victories against terrorism, I should say. And that, you know, it's for your electorate or for Congress people or for politicians, one of those I think is a lot more obvious than the other, if not more dangerous, which is scary.
It is. I mean, this does really seem like an issue for Congress rather than an issue for the courts.
Yeah.
But I think also we do have to keep some perspective on this legal decision. You know, if the court grants this, it's under the All Writs Act, which only applies until Congress takes action.
I see here actually that we've gone really close on our time. So is there anything that you want to wrap up with or any final thoughts?
I mean, just that, you know, we have to keep our eye on the main issue here. And that's the balance of short-term gains versus long-term security. You know, how safe do we want data to be when everything's being stored now? Everything's being collected. So how safe do we want that to be? And do we want to allow our government to collect that data or have access to the data if it means that other governments can do the same thing?
I would totally agree. And I would add, you know, maybe in order to be in this type of free society that we like to believe we are, that means we're necessarily exposed to some risk. And actually I think it was in an article I read. It's very contentious, but one guy was like, look, San Bernardino was terrible, but it's not an existential threat. And in order for us to have secure privacy, it might be the case that we need to be exposed to certain amounts of threats. If it's an existential threat to the United States, maybe then we could be having a conversation about eroding encrypted privacy. But for this, it's a very emotional case. It's a very scary case because ISIS is very scary, but it's not the one we should be having this case about. And I'm kind of sympathetic to the idea that we might need to stomach threats in order to uphold something a little bit stronger.
Right. And there are, you know, there are other avenues of surveillance which are available now that weren't available before. You know, so we're actually, this is the point that Hayden makes, that we have many ways to catch terrorists that we didn't have before.
Yeah.
So we don't actually need this. It's helpful, but it's potentially extremely destructive. And not just personal privacy. We're talking about our economy.
Right.
About intellectual property, about, you know, American companies that could be destroyed if their secrets are leaked to foreign governments.
Which is a very real threat. I mean, you can't overstate the value of this decryption software.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, John, for coming.
Yeah, this
was
a pleasure.
This was really a lot of fun. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is the end of the law, and this is the end of the show. Thanks for listening.